This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies and the pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, my two favorites. Indeed, second to none. Stock up for your tailgate now at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Always a pleasure on my part to bring in the outstanding Mike Poorman, statecollege.com. Mike, welcome back. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Professor Jones. I was just doing some math about Steve Jones, the professor. See if I'm right. You're always good about this. This is year 22 for you teaching, and you're going to hit about 1,000 students in that time, right?
That's probably right. I have 21 this time through, and there was a period of time where I had like two or three springs in a row where I was teaching two classes. So, yeah, that's probably right. Yeah.
Wow, so you're over 1,000. Wow, congratulations. Yeah. That's quite a streak. It's not quite Cal Ripken, but when it comes to teaching broadcasting, sports broadcasting at Penn State, you're an all-time great, Steve.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm the only one that's done it, I could be categorized as the worst person I've had doing it too. So,
I appreciate that self-effacing humor. Nice.
Bye week is at a different time, but that's just the way the schedule fell this time through. What are you looking for out of this team following a bye week? And I know what the competition is Saturday.
I'm looking for a crispness and a ferocity that Jalen Reed showed in the first quarter against West Virginia. If they can find that within themselves, and I think that first quarter by Jalen, I'd be interested to see what you think if there's been someone that's come out with their hair on fire like that. I mean, that may be asking too much, but that's, you know, if that happens, then that comes within, and that comes from within the leadership of the players, not the coaches.
Which, you know, look, they had put together this lion position that is, in a sense, a hybrid. You can play him near the line of scrimmage. You can play him back and so forth. Is he the type of player that really fits what Tom Allen's been looking for in that kind of guy?
Well, that is a great question. I'm going to put a question back to you that I'm not sure I know the answer. How much do you think that – no one has mentioned this. Are there any similarities to the old hero position?
The old hero position was a strong safety. And that's just what it was called back in the day. It was not a third safety out there.
I thought that guy actually, you know, whether it was a Zordich or some of them, had linebacker, bigger kind of guy qualities.
If they were, it was because they were the fourth linebacker out there and not the third. And that's the difference between them. So that person would be a bigger size. Like Reed is a little bit bigger, but you'd be lining up as the, because they always lined up with three linebackers. Tom, of course, has been lining up with two, and Marcelo Ball was primarily that hybrid guy most years at Indiana, where he was part safety, part DB, part safety, part linebacker. because they were lining up with two linebackers a lot. This is a case where Penn State's been lining up with two linebackers. He essentially becomes the third, as opposed to back in the day with the hero position. The hero position was strong safety, but then would come up and be the fourth linebacker in a 4-4 look.
Well, great explanation. But I guess, you know, from the X's and O's, it's that. But, yeah, Reed's not super – he's not super big. He's really solid.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
But I will say this. He certainly has the right mentality.
Yeah.
How's that for an answer?
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. They have played six quarters of excellent defense out of eight, because the second half against Bowling Green, until the final drive, they'd only given up 48 yards in the second half.
It was like six in the third quarter. I think that was a defining number, because they came out and they go, listen, let's do this right, and 6 yards is really nothing.
Right, and that's essentially what they did in the first half. You know, their quick game got to them. There's no question about that. And once they, because Bazelak was 13 of his first 15. He then was only 12 of his next 24.
You may have mentioned this on your broadcast,
yeah.
But he's at least going to camp in the NFL, and that was his 42nd start as a big time college quarterback. I mean, that guy was good. He was serious. He was a quality, experienced quarterback.
You know, he had started at Missouri. He started at Indiana. So he had started in the Power Four. And we had pointed this out before the game that, you know, he does this. In other words, and we pointed out the tight end before the game that we thought he was a big-time player. So it's not as if before the game we didn't point out that Bowling Green had the capability of doing this offensively. Because they do. It's going to be interesting to see how they finish out in all this. This will be the last regular season non-conference game. Is this the kind of game that has the potential to set a tone to go into the Big Ten? Or is there another way to look at it?
No, as much as maybe, and that's a good question, and that would be kind of the hope. But, you know, Penn State's going to get into the game, and they know better than anybody, one, maybe two series in, the quality of the competition.
Sure.
And they'll figure that out quickly. I think the practice on Sunday is going to be as important as a game on Saturday. How quickly they can turn on the dime. How serious are they? How are they really into it for the first time in several weeks in a real game week? You know, the mentality of the players. I think as I'm thinking about, okay, what am I going to write on Sunday after the game? It won't be about the Saturday game. It'll be about, it's game week. This is a real team, and they have a real football coach, so they have to take it seriously. I'm not that you, even maybe with Kent State, you can look ahead, but I think how they begin next week is even more important.
Yeah.
Because they're going to perform okay on Saturday.
Yeah, because I am going to take a long, hard look at the Illinois-Nebraska game on Friday night. I mean, that to me is on the checklist of what they have to do. I want to ask about college football officiating, maybe officiating overall. Josh Pate of CBS Sports wrote an article about this. And I'll give you at least what my opinion is, and then I want to get yours. My opinion is quite simply this. The key to officiating is, does somebody gain advantage in the play by doing something? So look, if there's a holding penalty on an offensive lineman, it gives the quarterback more time. Okay, advantage. But if I'm over here, and if I'm throwing to the left, and I'm obviously throwing to the left, and a tug happens over on the right, why am I throwing that flag? Why? It has nothing to do with the play. Nobody gained an advantage. Zero. Now, if the ball goes in that direction, I'll throw the flag because now it's in my direction. But see, there are a lot of things I don't get because people don't pay to watch people officiate games.
No, I think you're right. This is where I thought you might go with that, but this may go hand in hand. The dollars involved these days and the stakes are so high that, and I don't know the percentage of officials at college football that's all they do, but in the NFL, that's all they do. And so one game could decide, one call could decide whether you make the playoffs, which has hundreds, millions of dollars of repercussions. And as college football is really a professional league, it has to be professional from beginning to end. And I guess I'm maybe taking you a place you weren't intending. But I read the other day about the folks in the staff, the general managers that are now the general managers, the people that are now the internal NIL people, it's those people. They are being paid at a rate that is getting close to, some of them, it's between $500,000 and $1 million. Yeah. So as the sport becomes more professionalized, yes, the officials, the sideline officials, the replay people, all of those have to be at a caliber that they've never been before.
Yeah, my biggest problem is really has rarely, if ever, been the guys on the field or the women on the field. It really hasn't. My problem in recent years is a problem I didn't think was going to happen. My problem's been with the replay guys. They've made so many baffling decisions. The West Virginia game, Jack and I kept looking at each other like, what, they called what? You confirm that?
I mean, like, even at the beginning with the West Virginia clapping signals, could you see that on the
We only knew about that because Brian Tripp mentioned it to us on the sideline with something that we didn't see up in the booth. So Brian mentioned that on the sideline because he's down there. Because I don't do the game off TV. And when Brian mentioned it, we're like, no wonder Drew's upset. And so, I mean, things like that. Now, you know, first of all, it's the West Virginia defense that's out there, which means the crowd is louder, which means the ability of an official to hear that is more difficult. How about that?
No, that is good. As a quick aside, of all the things I've seen from Drew, and I'm probably like everybody else, right? His reaction to that and then his stiff arm later, like, Those are the things that you really love to see from your quarterback who's now a veteran. Those type of intangibles, because both times it gets the sideline fired up and the whole team's into it. Like, this is our guy, right?
Well, he's a little bit lighter, and because he's been in the weight room an extra year, he's stronger. So he's a little bit quicker, you know, point A to point B. And because of the weight room, he can throw a stiff arm. He's stronger, and that's where he is right now. Go ahead.
I saw a lot of people gave Chuck Losey a lot, and he should. A lot of people gave Chuck Losey credit for that stiff arm.
Yeah. When you look at his level of play, it's two games, but when you've looked at his level of play, have you seen something different from Drew Aller?
Yeah, no, yes, his willingness, I don't know how to put it, but the answer is yes, and it's in all that he does, and that's what you want. You know, that position, there's so many other things that go into it, so I think those things are happening, and I think that's... you know, that bodes well. Like, I did a preseason list of the most important people on the football team, and Drew's one, and Andy was two. You know, I think how Drew goes, the team will go this year. That's pretty simplistic, but I do believe that.
I do have to ask you about what they were going to eventually do with Beaver Stadium. I mean, Mike, you've been there for, you know, for decades. I mean, the difference is you don't look it, but you've been there for decades.
Thank you.
You've seen what the place has always looked like and what they've done with it or what they haven't done with it. How interested are you in how this final product is going to be and what it's going to mean for the fans?
Well, that's a good question. I have to tell you what I think has been, for me, because I wear a lot of hats at Penn State, I like the West. The West Tower is, Pat's done a great job of getting some significant money from some significant people to build that out, to turn that into a welcome center, so that it's not a seven days a year thing, that it is a welcome center. It's where, you know, when students and their families, potential students and their families come in, you know, Shields or the Hub is a rallying point. Now it'll be this, when this is all done, it'll be this stadium. And it, you know, it's the old saying is that your athletic department, your football team is the front porch to the university.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
Literally that Welcome Center is going to have a front porch. And I think that's a great marketing tool for Penn State. It's really smart. And I'll be honest, I like that all the money is not just going for one sports team. It's going to benefit all the university. And Misitano and Lubert are very smart and very generous to make that happen. And they're going to get a lot more bang for their buck. And so is Penn State by making that your portal to coming to the university as a prospective student.
That's a great point. And the two anonymous gifts as well. We just don't know the names attached to it.
Mike. Well, Steve, that was so great of you to put forth that gift. I'm going to out you on the air that I know that one of those $210 million was from you. So thank you very much.
And I don't like to brag. All right, so, yeah, right. Okay, Mike, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Appreciate the time you gave us today.
You're welcome, and I'm sincere. I know the impact. I mean, we know the same kids. 1,000 kids, 22 years, that's a big deal. Congratulations, Steve.
Well, Mike, thank you. That's very kind of you. Hey, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care, bud. Bye-bye.
Mike Poorman. StayCollege.com also teaches in the College of Communications.